Committee meeting of Mount Pleasant Town Council for 9:45 today, June the 3rd. We began our earlier meeting with a moment of silence for the folks of Virginia Beach, Virginia, and that certainly strikes close to home. We won't do that again at this meeting, but I'll just ask everybody to keep them in their thoughts and prayers, and keep our city in your thoughts and prayers as well. Thank you. Item number one is approval of minutes from the May 6th meeting. Is there a motion?
So moved.
We have a motion. We have a second. Any discussion? All in favor of the minutes as submitted, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion passes. The minutes are approved unanimously. Public comments. We ask everybody to make their public comments at this section. You come to the lectern, give your name and address, and you have 2 minutes. And then when we get to items later, we may ask we will solicit public input on that, but we ask everybody to go ahead and make your comments now at the first part of this. So if you would like to speak, please come up. We ask everybody, if there's a lot, to line up over here so that there's not a long wait time between speakers. Thank you very much.
Mr. Mayor and council members, good morning. My name is Mitch Witherspoon. I'm here on behalf of Hopcock Creek Plantation, Hidden Cove, and Ion, which we have formed a group or a committee concerning port issues, and that's not limited just to Longport Road traffic problems, but other things that we're dealing with the port. I've provided you a book here, and I'm just going to go through it very quickly because of this 2 minutes, but to give you kind of a heads up on what we're doing, and if I step on a toe along the way, I don't mean to, because as citizens of and residents of Hopcock Creek Plantation, we're kind of here with our hat in our hand, and we're asking for your help here. We really are. Okay, the item number one in the book, 31 July, is just a letter to Councilman Booster there, going back to last June when I spoke to this committee. Not going to go into it. After that that meeting, we had a meeting with the port in the town, as well as Hidden Cove and Hopcock Creek Plantation in August to discuss these road issues and the speeding and all the traffic problems we have on Longport Road. Later in October, we met with Sergeant Johnson, your town police officer that's assigned to that area. Number two is a letter to Brad Morrison dated 31 December 18, just asking again for the support on the Longport Road, referencing the speeding, trucks, and other safety issues. At that time, we did not know, and I did not know, that what we've come to refer to as the cut-through was being planned at that time. Dealing with Mr. Morrison, there was a 24 March Post and Courier article, and it referenced the cut-through to Long Tree Road. Of course, we had only just found that out just a little earlier. Also, there's some email exchanges that you'll find in number two between Mr. Morrison and myself, asking to be kept in the loop as far as anything that was going on. I sent an email to him. He responded very promptly and said, we will keep you in the loop of the process, and is not being developed as a project at this time, okay, because there's no funding available. Well, at this time is the key word there that you know, we keep going back to. As far as we're concerned and what we interpret out of this, particularly with the article of the Post and Courier, is that you are developing this cut-through from our development, Hopcock Creek Plantation, over to the Medical Park buildings and the atria that are located right off of Lone Tree Drive, all right? Number three is just an email exchange between myself, Brad Morrison, the state, and Hidden Cove, Hopcock Creek Plantation, and Ion, as far as the property owners. And
I need to wrap it up. 2 minute limit.
Then this is my 2 minutes up now?
Yes.
Okay, a three? Okay. I'm very sorry.
This, you'll see we're going over this when we get to this one.
Okay, if I can come back to it. Okay, I do not mean to hog the podium. Okay, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Not a problem. Thank you so much.
No, it goes fast. Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, good morning. My name is Tracy Fair. I'm also from Hobcock Creek Plantation. I'm the HOA president, so I'm here to represent Hobcock Creek, not just my opinion. There's just a few of us here this morning. The whole neighborhood tried to come, but we asked them to please refrain. I kind of to piggyback on what Mr. Witherspoon was saying, in your plans, you, first of all, thank you for inviting us. I forgot to say that. But in your plans, you refer to Section 5, which is the cut-through from to our community from Lone Tree. The reasoning behind this cut-through for Section 5 is because you're referring to the weave coming off 526. You feel like it would prevent that weave. I promise you it will not prevent that weave. Our cutting, turning off Lone Tree Road or shutting that off and making, redirecting all that traffic into our community, which we already do the weave to get in, and we're further down. Why not do a stop sign at the end or stop light at the end of the 526 ramp to turn right, just as you did when you did the overpass, the Hungry Neck overpass over 17, now when you come off the Georgetown exit, take a right like you're going to Walmart, there's now a light there. That stops the weave from going over to all those businesses. It would be less expensive, less intrusive, not upset a neighborhood, and no eminent domain would be needed. Also, the second thing I wanted to address is which I refer to as Sections 2 and 3, which is the widening of our entrance. We're just a community of 270 homes. We don't need three lanes coming out of our neighborhood. We've never had, I've never heard any resident complain about our entrance coming and going. Right now, the reasoning for making it three lanes, from what I understand, is so that Wando Park and our community line up so that the lights will sync up. Well, down at Park West,
right at 2 minutes.
Thousands of homes, I'm going to wrap it up, thousands of homes have three exits coming out of Park West. Across the street, just two lanes, just like ours. So everything you're proposing for Hobcock Creek, the entrance where there's live oaks, where there's expensive signage, mature landscape, why not do it on Wando Park side where none of that exists?
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Tom. I'm president in the Department of Highway Transportation. My name is Fred Foreman. I live at 1551 Highway 41. And I don't know what the plan result is right now on the widening of the highway, but I live on the highway. And I'm just asking that if they do widen it to a four lane in a turning lane, but what we see in the past that the representative wanted to bring through, going to affect a lot of homes on 41. I could move back, but that's the river and the marsh. Very little room to move. And reconsider on the four-lane, turning lane, and that's my excuse, and add a couple of lanes come through Park West. Park West got a multiple drive-through area. When I go home in the afternoon, I go through Park West, loop around, come home, all the traffic is on 41. I don't have that traffic going through Park West. I hope y'all put it in consideration.
Thank you, sir. Yes, sir.
Good morning.
Morning.
My name is Elijah Smalls. I live on 41. And I'm here because of the concern the community has. Right now, the options on the table, as was mentioned earlier, we can't afford to have the four lanes through 41, through the Phillip community. The best option on the board, on the floor, was the one that was mentioned to the area that is prepared to handle that kind of traffic, which is the Dune West area. But I'm asking you to keep in consideration those of us on 41. I can remember being a little boy. We played ball in the road, knew to get off before 12, but right now, if you were to widen that, there are a number of homes would have to be relocated, and they wouldn't be in the community. That means they'd have to get up and leave. Others wouldn't even be able to get across the highway. Why? Because Once, if it's widened, the speed limit is going to go up, which is, hey, we need a limit out there right now as it is. So widening it, you're going to be, it's going to kill the community. So please, keep in consideration those of us who were born and raised in this area. We have no place. At my age, I am not able to go and relocate anywhere. So do unto me as you would have me do to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Mayor and Council. My name is Dan Schaefer. I am a resident of the Laurel Grove subdivision in Mount Pleasant, and I've been there for about 15 years and have served on the board for about 10. And just wanted to give you a brief history. I've got two of my fellow neighbors here. They're going to miss the presentation, but I was on the committee in 2011 when we brought this issue before Mayor Swales. This is concerning the All-American Boulevard extension behind the commercial development right along 17 across from Oakland. The planned development at the time was not fully funded. We understand that project is funded now. We come today with the same concerns we had back in 2011, and that is that the proposed road extension comes through and connects the end of one of our quiet cul-de-sacs of our neighborhood. And Chris, one of our neighbors, is going to talk to a lot of the safety concerns we have. At the time, just for brief history, Mayor Swales talked a lot about connectivity, and I just want to reinforce the points we made back then is that by connecting our neighborhood, we're not adding connectivity. The 252 residents of Ivy Hall and the 76 residents of Laurel Grove still have great access through Lexington Drive. It's keeping all of our traffic off of Highway 17, which is the intent of the project, and we don't want the additional cut-through traffic through our neighborhood. So I'm going to turn it over to Chris.
Thank you. Yes, name and address, 2 minutes, please.
Chris Cardonaway. My address is 1412 Crooked Pine Drive. I also am a resident of our community, Laurel Grove, and have been since 2004. I currently serve on our board. Our concerns, like Dan said, are what they were in 2011 when we were here. Safety of our children. Last year, our community won Family Community of the Year from the Mount Pleasant Magazine. Our community is full of children each and every day riding bikes, playing along the street. By opening this road up, we have an extreme, I will say, concern of what that will do for folks who are wanting to use our community to cut through. I see it every day driving around town. Folks use ways, more aggressive drivers use those types of things to think they're getting somewhere faster. We already have students in our community in Laurel Grove that attend high school at Wando, and those are the students. Many mornings when I'm out, they're driving pretty quickly through our neighborhood. So I can only see that expanding this is going to make things worse for our neighborhood, and I think that it's something that we really would like to propose a different solution for, and I think Harmon Todd, who is actually lives the closest to where this is going to happen, has some solutions that he'd like to share. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, my name is Harmon Todd. I live at 1298 Laurel Park Trail. We come here today with some alternatives to making the connection. We didn't want to come empty-handed and say we don't want the road. You know, we wanted to provide some solutions. So passed out a handout with a few different renderings of the area. If you would, just look at page one for me. The first option is just not making the connection at all. You have the new All-American Boulevard, the existing one. Just doing a traffic circle at the new All-American Boulevard still gives you access to the properties for developmental reasons, but just doesn't make this connection. Options number two, and this is kind of two and three put on one drawing, but we've always been told there's no room. There's no room to get the new All-American Boulevard through without going through our traffic circle. Well, it's just simply not true. There are solutions. With good engineering, we can come up with solutions that are going to work for everybody. In this drawing, I propose putting a mountable concrete median in between the new All-American Boulevard and Laurel Park Trail. There's a little detail here. This is from the SCOD DOT manual. Another option is taking our current traffic circle and bumping it back away from All-American Boulevard so enough room can be established to get the new road through. And then maybe it's a combination of the two. Maybe you back the circle back as far as you can, and you put a median in. So that last 5 feet of the circle, a emergency access vehicle might have to jump. But that's what these are designed for. They're designed for emergency vehicles to be able to mount them and get across them if needed. So we just ask you guys to help us come up with a solution. It's kind of the easy way, saying it can't fit, but it can. So we'd ask y'all support in trying to figure this out with us.
Thank you very much. Next, please. Name and address.
Yes, I am Andrea McManus. Sorry, I've got a little bit of allergies going on. I live at 3325 Stockdale Street. You all know me very well. Met with Brad a couple weeks ago with a presentation of the facts about Stockdale Street and what we need in order to improve and lower the traffic volume. So we have 7,000 cars that travel down our road each day. We have 15 residential homes that are only 20 feet from the street. And the traffic is continually increasing. The volumes are increasing. We do have one safety measure that was implemented today, which is the SPEEDR radar detector signs. I think they've worked at first, but now the cars are just speeding right past them. I see the too fast sign flashing constantly. So we've proposed a bunch of different things to Brad. He sat down, he worked with us. I would like for us to take this in phases. I sent all of you an email, the things that we can do immediately, repaint the white lines first of all. We need to make sure that we get speed humps on our street, just like we put on Salterbeck Street. Thank you for that. I do think that does help. I think we need them for Stockdale Street, too. I want the speed limit reduced from the 30 to the 25 immediately, and I absolutely do not want these heavy trucks traveling down our street. I sent you all a video, 5-minute video. You can see how many trucks and buses are speeding down our street at high speeds. We all have small children. You all know this. We have about 30 kids under the age of 12 that live in the 40 houses in our neighborhood, and I would hate for them to get struck by a car or a dog. I just got a new puppy to run out in the street and get hit by one of these cars. We have to make sure we focus on Stockdale Street. It's less than a quarter of a mile. There's a bunch of different things that we can do to ensure the safety of our children. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Next.
Good morning. My name is Jennifer McCarthy. I live at 3381 Stockdale Street. And again, along with Andrea, we've been for a year and a half trying to get some implementation done for safety measures for our street. When these houses were put here, we feel as though there was negligence on someone's part. And as of right now, we really have not seen any action in a year and a half of emails, meetings, taking away from work, taking away from our children's time to be here. And so far, we have not gotten any answers. We do need a speed limit of 25 miles an hour. We also propose curbs, which I think the town is agreeing with. However, we don't know when. There's no timeline ever. The speed humps, I think, are very important. I think that they will help a lot with the high flow of traffic that we have each day that's only getting worse. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Everett Erickson. I live in Hobcock Creek. I'm also the trauma medical director at the Medical University of South Carolina and a trauma surgeon down there. I want to talk to you all about speed on Long Point. As you look at redesigning the flow through there, which obviously is necessary, right? There's a lot of trucks, a lot of cars. We need to look at speed. The speed limit east of Hobcock was recently raised to 40 miles per hour, and the number of wrecks has gone up. The chance of you getting injured if you're hit by a moving vehicle, car or semi, goes up at 35 miles an hour. Chance of you dying goes up 8%. Every 5 miles an hour, you increase that speed. We're potentially setting people up for real big injuries here. If you're hit by a car at 20 miles an hour, you're going to survive 90% of the time. You get hit by a car going 40, you're going to die 90% of the time. Please, when you look at all this, build a comprehensive plan and look at dropping the speed on that road. My recommendation is dropping it to 30. The distance from the port to the on-ramp is not that long. They're not saving any time, but we could save some lives. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Free Service, as well.
Next.
My name is Vicki Williams, and I live in the Laurel Grove subdivision, 1286 Laurel Park Trail. I'm just here to ask you to, I don't know how many of you or if any of you have driven through our neighborhood. I live right off of the cul-de-sac where you're going to, where you have a proposed extension. Our neighborhood has very small front yards. We have very small lots. The road's narrow. A lot of people, because our lots are small and there's not a lot of parking, when they have two cars or either three, if there's a teenager driver in the neighborhood, they park along the curb. So we don't have a lot of room for traffic to come through there. It's never been an issue because it's a cul-de-sac. However, if you open it, that's going to become an issue. The other thing is we're a first-time home buyer, retiree neighborhood. There are a lot of children, young children, and they play in the streets. They've been able to do that. They've grown up that way. There's going to be a problem. My main concern is we're a small neighborhood, but Ivy Hall is not. They have like 252, I think I heard today, homes back there. There's a lot of kids. When I walk through Ivy Hall, there are teenagers, and there's some speeding problem back there that we don't see in our neighborhood because we're just cul-de-sac roads. If that's opened up for those kids, 252, I don't know how many teenagers, but there are. And if they use that to go to and from school, we're putting our little children in danger. And it's a lot of traffic that we don't need. That's why I bought there. This was going to be my last home, and I don't want that ruined. Please consider that. They've given some really good options here for you. We don't need a couple of you have been kind enough to correspond with me, and I thank you for that. But you said you were looking out for us, and we don't want to change.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's 2 minutes. Anyone else before we move on the agenda? All right. That concludes item two, public comments. Item three is Highway 41 corridor improvements update. Mr. Oyer from the county.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor and committee. This will be a brief update on where we're at on Highway 41. We've been doing a lot behind the scenes, but we are still moving towards the time later this summer that we'll be able to recommend a preferred alternative.
Could you identify yourself for everybody?
Oh, I am very sorry. Yes. Yeah, my name is Cal Oyer. I'm the project manager for Charleston County on the Highway 41 project.
Thanks. Just wanted to clear that up.
Yeah, thank you. As most everyone knows, there's two alternatives, and we are still finalizing all the impacts of each of those two alternatives. Alternative one is shown on the left. It's five lanes from the Wando Bridge down all the way 41. It will be five lanes to its connection with 17. The other route that is being considered is called Alternative 7A, and it is five lanes from the Wando Bridge down to Dunes West Boulevard, and then 41 veers off of the old 41 route, five lanes through Dunes West Boulevard. Then it slides over and runs parallel to Bessemer Park West, part of Park West and Bessemer, comes on to the outskirts of the county park, and then goes back into Highway 41 and moves on down to 17. The part of 41 in between Dunes West and Bessemer would be converted to a three-lane road there. Okay. Right now what we are working on is we have done several traffic models, each one more advanced. So we are on the final stages of the most advanced traffic analysis that will define the intersections, how we will treat all the intersections on both of those alternatives. We're doing this for each alternative. We are also looking at, we've made advances on the interchange at Highway 17. And so we are applying those final traffic model studies on a good portion of 17 that will make the connection to 41. On the conceptual designs, can you go back? Okay, conceptual design for each alternative. As I said, we are to the point now where we have optimized how the road would lay out there, optimizing it to avoid as many impacts as possible. And we're at the stage now where we are, now that we have that perfect laid out, we are finalizing all the impacts. That's both natural and natural environment and the community environment. We are developing costs for the potential right-of-way cost, the construction cost, and the mitigation cost for each of those alternatives. And, of course, we're also doing this for the intersection concept at 41 and 17. We have done preliminary noise studies, and so the next step that we're looking at there is to identify where noise walls would make sense, and that'll be part of our, that's all wrapped into our environmental assessment. We're doing technical studies, all the impacts that we have to do for the environmental assessment that we will complete later on. The mitigation assessment and strategies, that's for wetland mitigations. So we've made progress on that. Of course, utility coordination is a big part of this job with Mount Pleasant Water Works and others. And as I said, we are putting that advanced traffic study on our concept design for the interchange at 17 and 41. Interim improvements project, we have gotten to the preliminary plans and completed the preliminary plans for that southbound lane addition. We've met with some of the communities most impacted on that, by that. And we are also, before we move to final design, we're reviewing alternatives to that additional southbound lane. There's a lot of impacts with that. We're seeing if there's anything else that we might could do that could improve that. We expect this later this week or maybe into the next week to have some information on that. So the next steps are to complete design and permitting for the interim improvements, and still we're on track to complete construction at the end of 2020. Next slide. Oh, was that the last slide? So the next steps for the overall project, we are meeting this week with the Army Corps of Engineers. They're the ones that will review our environmental assessment and make the final decision on what alternative we use. We expect to go out and get some public input on our interchange concept in July. So we'll put that out to the public, probably via our website or other means, and try to get some impact on the ideas we have for that. Our public meeting on the recommended preferred alternative will be in August. And then after a 30-day comment period on that, we'll submit our draft environmental assessment to the Army Corps of Engineers, and we expect them to complete the review and have their decision no later than summer of 2020. So from there, we'll move on to final design, get final permits, and right of way. And we're still on track for construction being completed in summer of 2025. That's my report.
For everyone assembled here, a lot of people think this is the town's project, that the town decides on the preferred alternative. Could you give everybody a little update on how this actually works.
Yeah, the National Environmental Policy Act requires us to do a series of studies and a very large either an environmental assessment or an environmental impact statement. And that's what we've been doing for the last 2 years. It's an iterative process, and you always have, and through the course of it, you have to go get public input, which we have done at our public meetings. So anytime you have a major federal project that is either got federal money in it or you have to get a permit on a significant project from a federal agency, that federal agency is the lead for this process, and they are charged with making the final decision on it. So to be in compliance with that law, we have been going through the NEPA process, and that's what we'll continue to do until the Army Corps gives us their final decision on what we recommend to them.
Okay. Staff, have anything to add so far? Council? Joe?
Just to be clear, the final decision maker on this is?
The Army Corps of Engineers.
Where's County Council fit in this?
County Council will be briefed as to our recommendation, so we brief County Council on that. That'll be later this summer on which alternative we are going to recommend as a preferred alternative.
Okay, and I believe we've already put in our druthers in that, correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
So the next public meeting on that is in August. No, I'm sorry. Go back. July.
Yeah.
Has that date been set yet?
That won't be a public meeting in July. That we're going to solicit, we're going to push out some information on our interchange concept and ask for feedback on that. We're probably going to do that via the website. We don't anticipate having a public meeting to present that, but we are going to solicit comments from the public.
Okay. Councilman Brewer?
Cal, since you're soliciting public input on the interchange, are there preferred options already designed for that intersection, or is there just one?
Well, this week we're reviewing what was put forth by the consultant, and it does look like they've landed on one alternative for it. So we just got that yesterday, so this week we'll be looking at it more. We'll go back to them with more questions and maybe massage it a little bit before we put that out next month.
So the first time the public will have an opportunity to put their eyes on that will be when?
In July. And in fact, we are having another meeting this week also to discuss just exactly how we plan on doing that. We're going to confer with your staff and get input from them as well on how that should look for not only just the interchange, but even prior to the public information meeting in August.
Thank you.
Where do you anticipate that public meeting on the preferred alternative would be held?
Well, at the park? Okay.
At Park West. Okay.
At the Park West Gym complex.
Any other comments or questions? Thank you, Cal. Appreciate your thorough briefing on that. Excuse me. That concludes item three. Item four, update on South Carolina Department of Transportation plans for weekend lane closures, reversals on the Wando River Bridge.
Yes, sir, Mayor. Thank you. We have Kevin Turner, who's the district bridge engineer for the SCDOT here, to just give you a very brief understanding of what's going to happen in the next few months.
Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me, Mayor. Brad. Basically going to summarize information that's been released by the department to date. If you pay attention to the newspapers, you can possibly draw some misconceptions as to what's really going to happen. To kind of bring us up to date with where we're at, obviously we had a tendon failure in 2016. We had a second one in 2018. Following the 2016 failure, we instituted a pretty substantial investigation into the capacity and the structure of the bridges. We've also added two additional redundancy cables you've heard us refer to in the westbound bridge. We've done a number of deck repairs and sealing. After we put traffic back on the structure last June 2nd, we then went on to replace the tendon that actually failed that led to its emergency closure. We've installed power. We've put in some monitoring. And like I said, that investigation was pretty extensive. We've tested about 16 miles of cable, done 300 visual inspections where we've cracked the tendons open, taken a look at them, and basically generated about 2,700 pages of data. And coming out of that, we had about 14 recommendations. We do have a construction project that is imminent. We put out a press release last week indicating we would be starting construction in June. We're going to be addressing 9 of the 14 recommendations that came out of that report, which will include replacing two more tendons in the westbound lane, as well as adding some of those redundancy cables to the eastbound lane that permit us to do work after a failure. We'll be doing some additional deck sealing, some conduit sealing, a bunch of efforts to basically prevent water intrusion. Big thing that we want to make sure you're clear on and that you have a good understanding of is the traffic impacts. We'll be doing a lot of the work as much as we can inside the box. We'll be doing a lot of it during routine nighttime lane closures that we're doing all over the state all the time. Most of the time, people don't even realize we're there. We intend to try to keep it that way. However, there will be 6 weekends, so 4 of them where we will be requiring a shutdown of a single lane. We would start that closure at 8 to 9 p.m., depending on which direction we're heading and the traffic volumes at the time. And we would look to have that lane reopened to travel prior to rush hour on Monday morning. So we're talking roughly 56 to 58 hours consecutive of a closure. So that would occur on 4 weekends. Presumably that would be 2 heading westbound and 2 heading eastbound. And then we have 2 weekends where we plan on reutilizing the crossovers. We've heard that called contraflow traffic, reversals. There's been a lot of terms that have been thrown around by the media and in the public on social media. So 2 weekends where we'd be doing that, we'd be looking at the same general time frame, again, starting after rush hour on Friday and reopening prior to rush hour on Monday. We're certainly aware of the traffic impacts that were caused with the emergency closure last May, and we're doing everything in our power to minimize that right now. As a matter of fact, the work we're doing on those 6 weekends, it's necessary work, it's required, and it's just work we just can't do in an 8 to 10-hour limited closure that we do regularly during the night. To prepare for this, we've been in communication with Volvo Car Stadium. We've already been in communication with the City of Charleston, as well as Brad, with the town, making sure that we have a good list of people with both entities that we need to meet with in advance of these closures. We do not have those dates established yet. We're anticipating trying to give the public about 2 weeks' warning prior to any such closure so that they can plan appropriately. We'd work with the media to try to get that information out and as accurate as possible, as quickly as possible. And we would anticipate doing our coordination with the municipalities in advance of that. And that pretty much summarizes the information I had prepared for you all.
Can I ask you to go back with one thing?
Yes, sir.
How many of those closures will involve a lane reversal?
2.
2. So there will be a total of 4?
There will be a total of 6.
A total of 6.
4 single lane closures, okay. And then 2 where we will close a lane in both directions and put both traffic on one structure, okay. Similar to last June.
Okay. So when we did this last year during the bridge crisis, that was staffed and manned by the state, not the town of Mount Pleasant. Is that going to be the case this time?
We have been in contact with Highway Patrol, and we anticipate utilizing either Highway Patrol or through Highway Patrol local law enforcement.
I'll just defer to staff, but I would think we would need to be apprised of that. That's a pretty significant manpower requirement. I don't know what their recommendation is, but I know that was a big concern when we were dealing with this last year.
Yes, sir. We understand that. And that's part of the process of why we have already reached out, trying to make sure that we've got the correct contacts, whether it be traffic, emergency management for the local municipalities, Certainly the police departments would be involved in that as well.
Okay. And the other question would be, is the summer busy time the best time to do this? Could you consider fall, winter? I know it's weekend. I know it's weekend, and we're, you know, our citizens are, what, 35,000 a day commute over that bridge.
Yes.
Going to work, and I get that. But it is busier around here in the summer. It's just a thought.
It is busier during the summer, and we've certainly tried to account for some of the bigger traffic generator type weekends. Obviously, the holidays, we're not going to be out there on 4th of July weekend during lane closure, nothing like that. The unfortunate thing with good beach weather is it's also very good construction weather, and much of the work that we have to do is temperature dependent. So it is quite likely that some of it will be required to be done in warmer months.
Understand.
Question?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you for that. I didn't hear you mention port activities. That has also been an issue over the past year or so. What kind of communication are you having with the port, and what kind of modifications or adjustments are you making with them to ensure that not only port traffic moves, but town traffic moves as well?
Well, we've certainly stayed in touch with the port as we've been advancing our construction project as a general rule. Really what we need to do first is we need to nail down the dates that we're physically going to be doing these lane closures and having these impacts. At that point in time, we'll be sitting down with the port. At about the same time, we're sitting down with the municipalities in advance of that public notice, be working to them to see what they can do as far as flexing their gate times and other things they can do to help us mitigate some of the rush.
Thank you.
Mr. Knight.
Yes, sir. You mentioned there was 14 findings in the study. And you're only doing 9. What are those other 5?
Good question. And it doesn't get asked that much, actually. There are 14 recommendations. Some of those recommendations deal with long-term monitoring or long-term inspection procedures, things that are just policy that we need to adopt as to how we maintain that structure long-term, nothing that would be so discrete as to fit into a single construction project. And some of those recommendations are things that we physically need to do the construction first and get out of the way of those other activities. Some of the longer-term monitoring, some of the remote monitoring sensors that we can put in the bridge, we need to get the construction completed first prior to installing those. Otherwise, they'd be firing off and giving us false alerts all of the time.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
Anything else? Staff, anything else?
No.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
We appreciate it. This brings us to item 5, continued discussion of Hobcall Bluff Drive, Lone Tree Drive, Connector Road.
Yes,
so
sir.
If you'll give us an overview, and I think primarily let everybody know where things stand.
Sure, and I'll try to how did we get here type thing. I'll try to be brief. I know we're pressed for time. Back in March, we brought before the committee some concepts that were born out of a study done in 2017 about what are some things over on the west side of Long Point Road that we can do to address both traffic and some of the land use issues. So that eventually got to our department on the really kind of the design issues, the traffic improvements. We have a consultant on board that has done some concept design, and that's what was presented to the committee in March. And this is essentially a summary of all of the concepts that the consultant brought forward. We had a meeting prior to that March meeting with the neighborhoods, and one thing that was abundantly clear, we understand this, was that they did not support the connector road is what we have as Section 5, the Hobcall Bluff Lone Tree Connector Road. So, and we did know that at the March meeting that was not something that they would support. So we are constrained by both budget and the fact that there's going to be a major improvement to the 526 corridor that will probably do some significant interchange work in this area. So we want to be prudent with what the money we do spend. So the decision was made to pursue Sections 2 and 3, which is essentially an intersection improvement at Long Point and Wando Park Boulevard location. And that design has begun based upon the direction from the committee. As far as long term, we say 2 and 3, if we did have funding left, we would probably pursue
Section 1 project design, which is an extension of that lane that tapers out right west of Wando Park, going west towards the port, go ahead and extend that down to Shipping Lane. So the conversations that we've had with the neighborhoods are just like any other projects that we develop. We have concepts. For instance, the connector road, that's out of our reach from a financial standpoint at this point in time, but it's a concept as far as getting better connectivity in that area. So we're pursuing the Section 2 and 3, essentially an intersection improvement at that location, and these other projects are not in our CIP. The signalization perhaps at Shipping Lane and a Hidden Boulevard is something that could come online when it's warranted, and we would handle that just like we've handled other intersections where it becomes warranted. We would encourage probably the state and the port to fund that project if they were able. So that's where we're at, Mayor, as far as our efforts on this project.
I appreciate it. One of the hazards of the public process is that when we pay for reports, they come back and they have lines on them, and it doesn't mean that we have approved those or funded them or are going to do it, but it's lines that somebody suggested we may want to look at. And so again, that Section 5, we did not approve, we did not fund, and there's no plan to actually do it.
No, sir.
I'm sure at some point the neighbors would probably love to see that line, you know, just take a little eraser and make that line go away. But we've kind of done the equivalent of that by making sure right now that nobody is pursuing that. We're not funding it. We don't have any plan to do it.
That's
I don't know if that assuages the concerns of the neighborhood. I assure you this is not the only map that has a magic marker line drawn on it that worries us and other people. But things don't happen until the council approves and says go ahead on that. So I don't know if that addresses your concerns in the notebook, if that's what you came to hear today. But if you want to tell us what your concern was, I'll be glad to recognize you and have you take a few minutes. We are running way over time, so we don't have time to go through the entire notebook, if you don't mind.
Sure, just addressing what you brought up. Going back to the 1 March meeting that we had with Brad's personnel, Brad was not at that meeting, but he had sent other individuals representing the town. And we met at the engineering office. Is it CDM Engineering? I think is what it is. All right. Paul, one of the employees here, one of the engineers. What's Paul's last name? Likens? Okay, I thought that was the way you pronounced it. Okay. Paul and I got into an exchange, very polite exchange, but he informed us that this was going to take place. And I informed him that we own the buffer property that would have to be sold to the town in order, or to the state, or whoever was going to fund this, so that it could take place. And we were not going to sell that property. He informed me very clearly with the table full of people that the town would be taking the property through eminent domain. Okay, we're this time on March, we're not talking about something that might be, might not be. We're talking about something that is going to be. Okay, this was the sense of the meeting, the purpose of the meeting. And from our perspective, we've had to take a number of actions to prepare from the standpoint of stopping you. Okay, and again, I'm not trying to step on toes here, but when we're told that our property is going to be taken through eminent domain, and let me stress again, that's what we were told, okay? We have had to acquire an attorney, all right? We are now preparing to go forward and see how this road is going to impact our neighborhood from a dollar and cent standpoint, meaning from every property owner there, will we sustain some type of loss on our homes, okay? Will they be devalued? I don't know. That's a question we've got to find out. And if they are, you know, what is that sum of money going to be? Who's going to make the neighborhood whole? But hearing you say now that this is not going to happen is because I will go back to July of 2014 when I stood at this podium at the other town hall, of course, and and spoke regarding the townhomes that were going to go in there. 96 townhomes that were going to produce a whole lot more traffic, I think, okay, than the current situation is going to produce. And Brad told us then that, and I said then, what are you going to do as far as access to these town hall homes? I said, I see you coming into Hopcock Creek Plantation and putting a cut through road somewhere. I said that then. Okay.
Okay.
I'm sorry, but this is a point we're trying to make. The town assured me, okay, this would never happen, okay? And we had an audience of over 200 property owners at that meeting. We filled up your old assembly hall, all right? So, am I hearing you say that this is not going to take place and the decision is made, period?
Well, let me put it to you this way. It takes an affirmative action of this council to do anything, and it's not even on our priority list at this point. It is in a report that a consultant came back with, and when we had a vote in March, we didn't even vote to do anything on that. That's the best I can tell you. Some other council, 2 years from now, we have an election this fall. I can't guarantee that they won't raise taxes or do anything else, but this council is not taking action on that.
Okay, but understand that does not leave us with a warm, fuzzy feeling. I'm not trying to give you a hard time now.
if you saw the list of capital improvement projects and the costs that they would take, you would be very assured that this is not in the works. That's what I could tell you. I can't bind future councils or mayors, but this council is not pursuing that.
All right, so
that's the only answer I can give you. Seriously, that's the only answer I can give you.
All right. Well, you know, that leaves me with you. Do we pursue, you know, what we've started, you know, based on the fact that we've been told our property is going to be taken through eminent domain?
You haven't been told that by the decision makers. You were told that by somebody at the staff level.
But do you, I know you can consider our concern, okay, when we are told that. Yeah.
Mitch, I do. I understand that. But what I'm trying to tell you is council has to vote and approve that.
And I do understand that, Mr. Mayor.
Thanks. I appreciate it. I just hope we cleared that up. Yes, sir. Mr. Kinney.
Yeah, I would just like to ask the transportation staff. So this type of thing gets out of control, and it'll be on Twitter, I'm sure, in 5 minutes. The reason for the connector to begin with, if Mr. Likens, if you could spell it out. I mean, I know there's some hospital stuff and doctors there, and there's a big project. My question is, very simply, when they built that and they do their traffic study, did they base their traffic study on this connector road or not?
Who are you asking when
the
they built that?
On the corner of the interstate there.
The continuing care facility?
Whatever's there. I don't know what it is.
Well, that's really separate from this issue. That would have been an impact assessment, and there was an impact assessment done on that. I don't know. I don't recall all the details of that impact assessment, but the reason that the consultants looked at this is strictly an operational issue. They say, well, we have a very short weave distance. We're going to have increased traffic from that ramp leg, you know, trying to get across to make that left turn. From a safety standpoint and just access control, that's the concept. It's pretty straightforward. So to get them back there, that's the impetus of the connector road, right?
Okay. Did any private projects rely upon this road?
No, sir.
Okay, so then.
No, sir.
And the council will ultimately fund what's going to be done, not the mayor or the transportation staff, but the whole council. So it really is not on our radar. It's probably not. It's not coming this year.
No.
How it gets in there? I hope we didn't pay a lot of money for that. It looks like it was a bigger project to study this whole thing and come back with options. So yeah. That's really.
It was a very broad. What could we look at in the area to improve traffic?
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And one more thing, the changes to 526 have not been, we don't even know what they're going to do.
No, sir. They're trying to figure out whether what we call a managed lane scenario is the best, where it could be a tolling lane or something like that versus what we call general use lanes. So once that question is answered, they'll get into the actual design aspects of, you know, what are the changes we're going to see all along 526 and the interchanges.
And how far off is that?
Goodness. Years.
Years.
The study will start. The study's already started on kind of the traffic front end stuff.
Right.
But the NEPA process will take several years to get through to understand impacts, if any, okay, on the interchange changes you'll see right here.
And so, Mitch, again, that's another factor that any future council or whoever would make until they know what's going to happen where 526 comes down there. The town would be very imprudent to start messing around with that, with Lone Tree. So just wanted to put that out there as well.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you. We don't want to get ahead of the NEPA process. I think that's it on that one right now.
We addressed the entrance that y'all are proposing.
Hang on just a second. Which entrance are we talking?
2 and 3.
Oh, the ones that we are proposing?
Yes.
Can we do it quickly?
Absolutely.
Okay.
No, I just.
If you'd come to the podium, thank you.
From what I understand, the justification for widening Hobcaw Creek's entrance is just for the lights to sync up. Is that correct? That's what we were told.
No, ma'am. It's not necessarily a synchronization issue. It's getting additional capacity out of the intersection.
Of Hobcaw Creek?
Of the intersection of Hobcaw and Wando Park Boulevard with Long Point.
But why would we need additional capacity when we only have ours is so small right now? I mean, we don't get backed up at all our entrance leaving our neighborhood. So to change our lanes from 2 lanes leaving to 3 seems like a waste of taxpayer money. I just can't have – we're concerned that setting us up with those 3 lanes is to later come back and address that connector road. It would then –
No, ma'am. I mean, and I'll be happy to meet with you to show you the current state of design so we don't do it here at committee. But essentially, to get the additional capacity, we need to align the left turn of your approach with the alignment of the other side so we can get away from what you currently have split phasing there, where one side goes, stops, one side goes and stops, where we can run them concurrently. Then you get a higher capacity. So I'll be happy to meet with you guys.
Perfect. That way I won't take up any more of your time. Absolutely. I'll just set up an appointment with this
great
person. Thank you so much.
We want to get your questions answered and appreciate everybody coming out. It saves us another meeting and taking more out of everybody else's time, so I appreciate it. All right, so that concludes item 5. Let's go on to item 6, review of All America Boulevard Project and its relation to Laurel Grove neighborhood. Again, another one we've heard a lot of neighborhood concerns. I did attend the meeting. I think Mr. Bremer was there and probably others. But all I remember is it was cold at Life Park Church. Was that January, December?
It was December.
December.
Yes, sir. So I think you kind of want a little bit of a history here and where we're how we got here and where we're heading. And the project, Laurel Grove subdivision, was approved in the 2004-05 timeframe. As a part of the platting of that and the approval of the whole impact assessment, a frontage road concept was developed. You can see it here. It was eventually platted in 05, and it shows the separation of the Laurel Grove, separated by a right-of-way and a roadway with the commercial outparcels. So when that design was done, there was obviously we have in our own ordinances interconnectivity and the eventual concept I call it a frontage road. It's really a backage road, but another parallel route to keep folks off of 17. And we have this all over the town as far as implementing that type of system and improvement. So that was the concept in 04 and 05, and it was platted this way to make the connection. So you see that the cul-de-sac, that's the right-of-way of the cul-de-sac, comes into the right-of-way to eventually make that connection. So there's and this project was designed and completed. It started in 2009, was completed in 2011. Phase 2 of the project was just recently funded last year. And so we really started phase 2. The emphasis was how do we complete phase 2. The only thing we were doing on phase 1 was going back and retrofitting a 8 to 10-foot multi-use path that we're going to have all along that area. We had to update the permitting also, but we weren't changing the design that had been completed back then. So we, in a sense, we're tied to the previous platting. Any other scenario that does not use what was originally designed is going to require additional right-of-way. So, I mean, this is the phase one project, what we call phase one. It began in 2009. and completed. This is phase two. It's under design. We talked about how we make that connection from George Browder over to the Park West traffic circle. So any design, and this is just something I drew up based upon the county's aerials, is going to require additional right-of-way. If we have to have cul-de-sacs, we have emergency vehicles that have to turn around, we have trucks and things of that. So if you wanted to back up the cul-de-sac, this is what it would start looking like. And that is just the roadway portion. That does not include a right-of-way. Actually, I have a right-of-way portion outside of it. That would be a scenario where you have the right-of-way. So that's backing the cul-de-sac up to the very edge of the frontage road right-of-way. Now, whether you could tweak it a little bit, I don't think it's going to matter. You're going to have to get right-of-way. I think pushing it out to the other side, you get into a commercial property that's going to be much more complicated. So I didn't have the opportunity to look at the proposals that were given to us, but
could you go back to that, because that's their loading dock in the
store. And so wholesale appliances there, that's where all their trucks come in on that side. So if you start talking about redesigning, you'd have to push onto that property to totally stay away from it, to leave the existing cul-de-sac there. That would be an expensive proposition. So and it would go away from the original alignment that we already have designed. We obviously hear what the folks are saying there about the potential for cut through. We do think that, I can't never say never. I can't say no one's going to use the road as in that manner, but I would think that most folks from what's the fastest route are going to come down to the entrance, Ivy Hall, Lexington Drive, and make that turn. And we're talking about an improvement there, a mini roundabout at that location that eventually facilitate any of those movements. So it was quick, but that's how we've gotten to where we are today.
Did we do a study to see if we think that Laurel Park will become a three-way right there?
We haven't done any study in that regard because it was designed this way from the very beginning. So the connection was assumed to be made. It was supposed to be. It really would be, in that sense, it would be the most advantageous to the neighbors to utilize that and not anybody else. But like I say, I can never say no one's going to do it, but that would be our – that was always the thinking when it was designed 15 years ago.
Right.
So to change it would just – I'm not saying anything's possible. You can redesign things, but from our own ordinances about interconnectivity and having people to have reasonable and convenient access to the system, that was the thought.
Appreciate it. Any other comments from council? Yes, sir.
Brad, going back to Ivy Hall in this area when it was being developed, I know at one point the town agreed to a bicycle path as opposed to a street. Is that this?
No, sir.
I don't have a recollection of that. It's been 15 years, but
yeah.
I mean, like I say, you can tell it the way it was platted that it was going to tie in. So I don't think it was a scenario where it tied in and just with, well, we couldn't physically do it. The roads got to occupy that space. So I don't recall anything just about
what kind of timeline are we on doing this?
We have about $2 million in funding now. I think 2022 is when the rest of the funding comes in, a little over $3.5 million. That's our current timeline.
Okay, but we have, other than design, we haven't spent money?
Not on construction.
Construction. That's
right.
Okay. Okay, so we have a little bit of time we can look at this.
We would have to have your direction. I mean, we have presented that to the public. We understand what their concerns are. We don't have a lot of options to move anything unless you wanted to talk to those two property owners at the end and say, well, if you want for us to redesign it in that manner, it's going to require some dedication to right away, and it's going to get very close to the structures. So to answer your question, I guess we have time, but eventually we'd have to have a decision on the ultimate design.
I'd like to have at least a month probably to look at this, because I'm remembering stuff from back when Ivy Hall was doing it, and that was, back in 2004. Yeah, I was first on council, and I'm just remembering these things. I'd like to, if I could have, a month that I could sit with Brad and them and look at this, because we certainly want to do the smart thing with regard to spending the town's money and all that, but then we want to do the best we can with regard to the residents as well. So
you want to just have this come back in a month?
If that's possible, yes, sir.
Okay. Can we just do some work?
Sure,
Mr. Knight.
I have kind of the same question I had with the other project. Is there any private stuff along here that use this road as their justification for what they want to do on their property?
The entire approval of the development was predicated on this frontage road. But after that, no, sir.
None of those commercial properties are dependent upon this volume?
No, sir.
And then I have a second question. It seems to me like the real problem on 17 is from about Lexington or Porcher's Bluff 241, from 3 till 6 every night, dead stopped, going southbound. Why is this section even being looked at before the section that we need further down?
Well, we do have the 41 improvement that will have a significant, I won't say impacts. It'll have a positive on the operations
right,
in the area.
I don't think most of that is 41 related, because most people, it's school traffic from Wando. So they all go through Park West Boulevard to get to Rivertown and all those places, and it's the through traffic that's jamming up every day. And my question is, if we need a frontage road, it's probably not here but there that we need it.
We have this system of frontage roads that link all the way, that are proposed all the way to 41 and then beyond 41 to pick up on this section here. So long term, they are in our plans.
Can we swap that out and try and get that one moving quicker? Because that seems to be a real tough situation. The residents are all shaking their heads about, they know the traffic I'm speaking of. I mean,
it's achievable. We have most of the right-of-way, if not all of the right-of-way. Is that correct?
The only piece we don't have is right north of that.
We have the funding coming in. It's been designed. The frontage roads are critical to
It's not chopping up a subdivision. I don't understand why we don't just do that.
And that'll come with its own complications.
Yeah, I'm sure it will, but there's no subdivisions there.
But the long-term direction has always been to develop the frontage road system to relieve the pressure off 17. And, to forgo this project, that's your decision. It's a green light right now in the CIP, so to take a council action, but.
Do you want this?
No, please.
All right, Mr. Rohn.
I'm a little embarrassed to say that I didn't know this neighborhood was tucked back there. And I spared you the campaigning in 2015 because I didn't know you were there. I thought you were all part of Ivy Hall. So as this project progressed and I knew you were there, I went and drove through your neighborhood and become familiar with it. It's a beautiful neighborhood, and it is tucked away, and it's quiet, and I didn't speed. So I certainly understand your concern about cut-through. You certainly don't want to do anything to negatively impact the neighborhood. As I told you in our meeting when we did meet, I don't think the potential for cut-through is really significant here. I think it's more of a benefit to your neighborhood than it would be for anyone else to go through. But that being what it is, as Brad said, certainly some people could do that. I would like to see if there is a way for us to find a solution here. I think interconnectivity is important. We've heard it a couple of times today already in our neighborhoods. And I've been around long enough to know that we've done some things in town that have allowed neighborhoods to be developed here with single entrances and exits, which is never really a good thing. So this would be a benefit, I think, to the neighborhood to have a quicker way out without having to go to heavier used intersections. So I think maybe there's a solution here if we look at it again. One question I do have is, looks like we have a multi-use path on the, is it the north side or west side?
In this scenario, it's on, I'll say, the left side.
The other side, yeah.
And it's on the right side of the other road. We have to, it's, and there's environmental permitting reasons for that.
So if it were moved to the other side, would that provide some more space for the movement of the cul-de-sac?
It could, but all the neighborhood access is on that north side, so that's the, one of the reasons we did it. But as long as you keep a center line alignment of the road itself, it really won't matter. You'd have a little bit more to work with any redone cul-de-sac, I guess, is what you're kind of insinuating.
Yeah.
So it's the potential to lessen that right-of-way implications on those two houses.
Yeah, and because I feel like, you know, the agreement seems to be that this wouldn't necessarily be a great way to cut through, I don't know really what the big deal would be about closing it off, honestly. I mean, I think it hurts the neighborhood more than anything else, but perhaps another month to look at the options they provided and maybe take a look at the option of the multi-use path. I think there might be a way here to find a solution here that protects the neighbors, because that is it's a nice, quiet neighborhood. It feels like you're somewhere different. I mean, hard to believe you're a couple hundred yards away from all that traffic, and yet you can't hear it, you can't see it, so it's beautiful. So I think some extra time here is probably prudent.
Okay. I think the conclusion is we'll keep looking. Thanks. All right. That concludes item six. Item number seven, discussion of Ben Sawyer Bridge closure. I think, Mr. Kinane, you put this on the agenda.
Yes, sir. Just wanted to ask staff how the closure went, and FD, if we, you know, we have a automatic aid agreement with Sullivan's Island, and it's specifically for the Toller's Cove area, which, as we know, a wind-driven fire down there is really your big fear, and then waiting on a truck from Dunes West, it's kind of tough. So I was wondering what the wind-up was. Did you get some help from Charleston standing by, or do you have a game plan? That's really the only two questions I had. And also just from the PD, how it went. And
We were working off-duty in that area anyway, beach traffic there and at 517. So the call was made at 424. We were on scene at 424 because we were already there. We immediately set up a diversion, and it was a two-part diversion, one where we were turning around eastbound traffic on the causeway and directing them back, and then still allowing some traffic out to Toller's Cove and the houses along the route. We kept that. We did have to reallocate some personnel to 517 just because of the increased amount of traffic flow there. Then Charleston County also assisted, as they do with the beach traffic, both on Sullivan's Island and on Isle of Palms. And the bridge was reopened. We maintained that till about 9:23, at which time the bridge was reopened to vehicular traffic, still closed to boat traffic. We maintained that diversion up till that time.
It was a great job, Chief. The natural question is what happens when that same thing goes on in the morning. That's really, and it's then we're completely stopped in town. So I'm sure your traffic people are looking at all those scenarios.
We have a plan in place for long-term closures of our bridges and traffic rerouting. Granted, it would cause some significant traffic on Rifle Range Road. A lot of that traffic would be diverted to 517. But a lot of that traffic then, as long as it's not on the weekend, or leaving the islands, not necessarily going to the islands.
Right.
So that traffic is not necessarily in the morning, but in the evenings when it's coming back. But it is going to impact Rifle Range Road, and a lot of traffic would be funneled to 517 should that occur during the morning.
Thank you. Chief, yeah, just if you have anything, if not, that's fine.
So, yes, sir, we do have an automatic aid agreement. Anything southeast of McCants and Rifle Range, they send a truck, and any fire response, we automatically send a unit to them. And we did put the city on standby, knowing that we may need an extra ladder truck in that area. And my main concern isn't really us, but just getting aid to them. If they have a fire over there, they're a much smaller department than we are, so I'd be more concerned for helping them out. To my knowledge, we sent one of our trucks to kind of assist with cutting one of the shackles, but DOT was already there.